Hey everyone, my name is Jeff Blonick, Vice President of Enrollment Management at the University of Oklahoma. Welcome to the ELP.
Welcome to the ELP, the Admissions Leadership Podcast, a series of one-on-one conversations with people who have been climbing the leadership mountain in college admissions. Some are nearing the summit, some are already there. But how did they get there, and what can other climbers learn from their mindsets, habits, and experiences? I'm your host, Ken Anselman, VP for Enrollment Management at RHB, and as you heard with me today is Jeff Blonick from OU. Hey, bud.
Hey, Ken, how are you? It's good to see you today.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. We are two people who I feel like we worked together, but we actually never had the pleasure.
I think we crossed over for about 3 or 4 days, Ken, September of that year that I started in admissions and you were leaving for Lawrence. So I think it was maybe like a 3 or 4 day crossover.
It was 2004.
2004. That's right. And yeah. I wasn't sure if you wanted me to give the year.
Oh, how vain do you? Well, no, don't answer that question. Right. But yeah, no, we barely overlapped.
Right.
I'll say I remember every day, and I knew you were destined for greatness.
That's right. I could tell you were too.
Except I remember very little of it because as you're departing a place, it's just kind of a strange whirlwind. And I remember that was also when NACAC was in Milwaukee and I was on the local arrangements committee. So there was just a whole bunch of weirdness around that time.
Well, I can tell you when that week, I would come home every day and my job was to kind of entertain guests at receptions and go to this conference. And I remember my wife saying, what in the world kind of job did you get? And so,
what was the answer?
the most amazing career ever, I think.
Exactly. And so that's the, before we started recording, I know we were, and listeners who've been with the show for a while will note that there are a lot of folks that I used to work with or who came out of the same coaching tree, so to speak. And so we're both kind of the Roby Blust coaching tree from back in the day. And you got more of Roby as a boss than I did.
I did. Even. Yeah. Over 7 years worth. So I'm very, very fortunate. That was a very good fortune to have Roby at the start of my career.
And so you were at Marquette for a bit, and then you headed off to, I want to say, was it Whitewater?
Yeah. So Ken, if I could go even further back.
Walk me through the journey, and then I want to unpack a few other things once we get there. But yeah, take us from the start.
Absolutely. So going all the way back, so my journey to admissions, and of course, as I'm sure with you too, most people in admissions and enrollment, it's a straight path with crooked lines. So how you get there is always kind of interesting. But and that's, by the way, Ken, I really have enjoyed listening to all of the different guests that you've had on and just kind of their paths to this career.
Oh, thank you.
So going all the way back.
And now it's your big moment.
That's right.
No pressure.
Yeah. So going all the way back, so I grew up in beautiful Winona, Minnesota. I don't know if you're familiar with Winona, but beautiful
the
little
other
town.
Side of the river.
That's
the
right. The river. It's the Miami of Minnesota. There's actually a website you can check out, but it's called.
Wait a minute. Well, okay, hold on. You can't just pass that. What? How is Winona the Miami of Minnesota? Is it because of the palm trees, the blue water, the clubs?
So I think it's the warmest town in the state, and then it's in the southeast corner. So they did a kind of a marketing campaign recently called the Miami of Minnesota.com. So check that out. But all my life,
this episode brought to you by Winona Convention and Visitors Bureau.
That's right. So all my life, from the point when I was very, very young, I wanted to be an attorney. That was, even as a little boy, I'd tell people that I wanted to be an attorney.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Not even a lawyer, just an attorney. Probably pretty strange. But my son tells people he wants to be a cowboy and a basketball player, but, I wanted to be an attorney. And, you know, looking back, it was, wonderful parents. My dad, was a city attorney in Winona and had his private practice. And he was this really ethical, integrity-filled, extremely hardworking person. And always looking to make a difference in the community and with individuals. Yeah. And so I think that's what I admired. I don't think I realized that. I just kind of had this vision that that's what I was going to be someday. So I ended up at Marquette in Milwaukee. And, obviously we share our alma mater. And
that's right.
Which was a terrific experience there, and was, poli sci and philosophy pre-law student. And I met my wife, Ruthie, there as a senior. She was a sophomore. And went right on to Marquette Law,
didn't even stop to take a break. Just all, right, because you knew what you wanted.
That's
you
right. Wanted. That's right. I was on a mission. So started at Marquette Law School, and about I would say halfway through law school, I got really it was kind of one of those crisis moments in life, and just wasn't connecting with the ultimate career path that I was kind of seeing.
That must have been a bit of an existential crisis. Yes. If you had been on that path for as long as you were, what was the
dark night of the soul? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was
do
tough.
You remember what it was that brought that on?
Yeah. I think I just did. I was talking to a lot of fellow kind of law students who had kind of gone into practice and just didn't see, obviously the big firm life is a little daunting with the very long hours, and just they weren't connecting with their career. So I just wasn't feeling it. So it was one of those things where I think for the first time in my life, I really tried to step back and see what is it that I want to do? What kind of impact do I want to have with my career? So oddly, it was halfway through law school that I did that. And so, and I want to be clear, it wasn't Marquette Law School that was bad. It was just me kind of going through this thing.
Yeah. Well, and you were halfway in, so it was sort of like the point of no return.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I did a lot of reflection. I talked to a lot of people during that time. And then when I kind of stepped back and looked at what was I really passionate about and some of my experiences that I had had, I had been an RA as an undergrad and then an apartment manager for Marquette as a grad student.
Kidding.
Yeah. And so
you're one of those.
I'm one of those. Man.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. It's going to be a little mini class reunion here. Where were you an RA?
I was at Schrader Hall.
Schrader okay. Hall. Oh, yeah. Nice. At least that one's still standing.
Yes,
nice.
That's right.
Mine is gone.
Is it McCormick?
Yeah. Into the ether.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
an apartment manager. Okay.
Yeah. An apartment manager. Right. Yep. And so, I knew I loved working with college age students and kind of helping them, kind of in that pivotal time. And so during my 3L year, my third year, I applied to 215 jobs in higher ed. So I decided, higher ed is the direction.
215 jobs. 215.
Yep.
Okay.
And so somewhere in my attic, I've got a floppy disk with a spreadsheet of all the jobs that I meticulously tracked and all the, and how I followed up with them. And I was hand delivering many of them and, I just was not getting a taker. So it shows you how much people want to hire lawyers, or attorneys. 215.
So 215. Yeah. And were these admissions gigs? Was this Res Life? Was it kind of all over higher
all
ed?
All over the place. You? All over the place. Just trying to get in the door somewhere. And hopefully near, most of them were in the Midwest. So trying to stay close to Milwaukee. So finally I got an opportunity, after 215 tries, financial aid, at University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. So that's kind of where I got my start. So shout out to, Trina Bodart and Jane Hoyen Clark, who gave me my opportunity there.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. So I got a start in financial aid and, I learned two things. First of all, I learned a ton about financial aid, doing professional judgments, PJs, meeting with students at kind of this challenging time, being kind of precise in aid calculations. But also, I think I learned that I didn't want to do financial aid. So I think that was the other part of it. That wasn't kind of the perfect fit, but it was a great experience. So that was at UW-Milwaukee. And then I had the great fortune of moving on over to Marquette admissions. And didn't know what I was getting into, but you've had Roby on this program, and Roby is just an absolutely incredible leader in person, smart as anyone I've ever met. I think he set very high expectations, but he cared deeply about our team and about our students, about the university. And he's hilarious. I mean, it was everything that you would want in a, in an experience. So it was really just a wonderful, wonderful time. And of course, he also hired superstars like yourself, you know, Jen Mahacek and Gene Burke and Connie Bennett, Keith White, Carlos Garces, Latrice Harris Collins, so many.
Oh, man.
That it was.
It's old home week. This is,
So,
to be fair, Roby didn't hire me. Roby tolerated me.
Oh, yeah, he Brown,
Ray Brown hired me. But no, that's a heck of a place, a heck of a team.
It is. It was. Work with. Yeah. And I'll be honest, in the 7+ years that I was there, I probably felt like I was going to work 3 or 4 days. I mean, it really, it was long hours, you know, we worked hard, but it was, it felt like something that I loved, you know, and I think that was what a blessing to have that experience.
Yeah. Well, you had another, Marquette High kid on your team there.
Dan Hamrin.
For a while, right? Dan Hamrin, who, we also share a Venn diagram with.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
So Dan's now the director of admission at University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, but he was on your team at OU.
Yes. He was the first hire I made at OU when I got here. He was a really impactful hire here in the time that he was here.
Yeah. As he was when we hired him away from you.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But I knew he was going to end up in Wisconsin.
He wanted to come back to Wisconsin, but I'm so thrilled that he said yes to Lawrence is the place he wanted to be.
Yes.
Ops director. But this isn't about Dan, although hey there, Hambone.
Hey, what's up, Hambone?
Shout out. But back to you on your back to you on your Marquette dream team.
Yes. So you know, during that time, I mean, I recruited all over the place, Ohio and Atlanta, California, everywhere. And I think that helped me a lot just to get perspective on what was happening. You know, just kind of across the country and, you know, just kind of being part of that team that, you know, great ideas, no matter who thought of the great ideas, were allowed to really flourish and be pursued. And so I think that's something that I really took from Marquette and loved, you know, I loved every element of that job and that time there. Ultimately, so I, you know, 7 years in, we had a baby, and I could feel that I needed a new challenge. It was a very difficult decision, I would say, because wasn't that I didn't like anything about it. It was just, I knew I needed a new challenge. And so I applied to become,
what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely. We've both been there. So I applied to become director of admissions at University of Wisconsin Whitewater. Which was, it's just a wonderful school. I wanted to just say that, you know, the public regional schools, I think, are so often overlooked and, really are terrific, terrific institutions. I loved Whitewater, knew nothing about it when I came in, but I really had a very good experience there.
What was that adjustment like going from a big, a relatively nationally known, place like Marquette to a regional public, like, and, you know, obviously jumping into a big time leadership role there as director of admission, but what was the adjustment like for you there?
It was a challenge.
The one to the other.
Yeah. It was a challenge. It was the first time in my life that I really supervised. So I had a team of 13 people there and just trying to, they hadn't had a director in a couple of years. So it had been, there's some strategic things that really needed to be looked at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just jumping into that with 2 feet, was something else. And obviously it was more regional in focus. So, you know, Wisconsin and Illinois, where we're drawing most of our students from, but really kind of looking at every layer of their operation and trying to take some of the things that I learned from Roby and from the others that I mentioned, and sort of apply it at Whitewater.
Yeah. I was going to say when I went up to become director of admission at Lawrence, I hadn't had any direct supervisory experience except for a student intern that I'd had. So, I mean, they took a leap of faith on me. I'm curious so you said you leaned on some of the lessons from Roby. How do you establish your identity with a team as a brand new, in many ways, I mean, brand new to role, brand new to place,
right,
brand new to supervision. I don't know why I put the accent on it like supervision, but whatever, you know what I mean?
That's what we say in Oklahoma, actually, supervision.
Oh, really?
So yeah, like umbrella.
Under the umbrella as the insurance?
That's right.
Exactly.
Right.
But how do you establish yourself?
Yeah. So I was very fortunate. I had a boss there, the ABC, Matt Ashenbrenner, mm-hmm. who, if you can go from Roby Bluss to Matt Ashenbrenner, he was, you know, super humble, super supportive of my ideas and just kind of walked alongside me. So I think that was a huge part of the experience there, is just having
choose your boss as well.
That's right. And he had just started at Whitewater too, a few months before me. So I think that helped a lot. And I think, you know, the approach that I took, which is a similar approach that I took at OU, is just listening to people, you know, being very, I'd spent, you know, 30 minutes talking to each staff member, and just hearing kind of what they're doing, you know, where they would like things to go, you know, what have been kind of the barriers to getting there, and then trying to, you know, not coming in with any preconceived notions. I mean, of course you've got sort of your thoughts, but really taking the time to really listen and establish that relationship first before you start to work. And I think the other thing that we did was really collaborate across campus. That was really the first time in some time that the admissions office had really brought in the colleges and really worked to recruit students with the colleges kind of alongside them. So I think those are some of the things that I did early on. While this was all happening, I was commuting 68 miles each way. So this is kind of part of the weird part of my life. But, you know, driving the hour and a half each way, you know, when you're trying to establish yourself,
a new family.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep. So that really, it wears on you. And so, and that was also the last year that I was there, 2013-14. If I remember, was the polar vortex year in Wisconsin, if you remember that.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. So we had, I think, 28 straight days below zero or something ridiculous. Oh, yeah. And my wife, who's from Alaska originally, and I'm from Minnesota, and neither of us, we just looked at each other and said, I think we need to move south somewhere. So
the wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that year. USA Today had run a picture, you know, had run a story about the polar vortex, and the cover photo was of a Lawrence student, like with their face completely frozen. And I'm thinking,
it's great.
Thank you so much, USA Today.
Great marketing.
Oh, right at the beginning. Like, I think it was maybe February when that had happened.
Yes.
Or January. But students are getting into yield season.
Yes. Perfect.
How delightful.
Exactly.
Time to go. So, you decided you wanted to head south.
Yeah. And, you know, I was also, I think one of the reasons we hadn't moved, I guess, you know, closer to Whitewater, I knew there was probably wasn't going to be my ultimate destination. And I was attracted to kind of the flagship type experience that I kind of saw at other schools. And so OU did a national search for director admissions, and you know, I didn't know much about Oklahoma at the time, you know, to be quite honest. I had a brother-in-law in Tulsa, and I thought, oh, you know, we'd be right next door, but it's really 2 hours away. But I saw right away, you know, I just went through the interview process, and I saw right away what a special environment there is at OU. It's really a gem of a school. There's some incredible academic programs, but I think what sets it apart is the OU family. We've got this it feels smaller than a flagship school, if that makes sense. Very passionate alumni. And I like Norman. I thought Oklahoma City was really cool, kind of on the rise. And so, you know, we had to make a call really quickly. And I decided, we both decided, Ruthie and I said, you know, let's take the leap. And it was a great move. So
it's a big leap. Yeah.
So I remember driving down, it was 900 miles to get here. We drove down, we had two kids at the time, two small children. And I remember, it was 103 degrees. It was July, 103 degrees.
The opposite of a polar vortex.
That's right. And, I didn't know a soul. And, you know, I said to myself, I'm, you know, I'm, I don't have a barbershop, a bank, or a breakfast place. I don't, no idea where I'm going here, but it quickly became home. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Which did you find first? Barbershop, bank, or breakfast place?
Yeah, I would say, probably the breakfast place, but it's changed since, okay. since the original, place. A breakfast places, I think, is really important. So
actually, I like that. I like the alliteration of it, but also yes. the strategy of it. Like, okay, just to find your groundings.
Got to figure out where I'm going. Yep. Mm-hmm. So when I showed up, the Office of Admissions and then Recruitment Services were two entirely different operations, different personnel focuses, not much interaction between the two. And so that was interesting. I took the director of admissions job. So it was very operational and not very involved on the recruitment side.
Right. I remember that.
So after a year of that, they asked me to kind of bring the two departments into one, into the Office of Admissions and Recruitment. And so.
So we're talking, how big are these teams that we're talking about?
Yeah. So.
Separately.
Yes. Yeah. So one was about 40 people and one was about 70 people.
Okay. So, we're talking about some serious scale here.
Yeah, that's right. And so, we really went after it, and it was a gigantic challenge, obviously. Mm-hmm. A lot of change management, listening to people, trying to figure out how do we kind of integrate the two areas into one. And that took some time, but it's, I think, been very successful. And we did, there's a lot that we did, just kind of working across campus to collaborate and bring the colleges into the experience.
This was on you to lead this? I mean, you're saying we, but they asked you to pull these things together. Were you still doing this as director of admission, or had you
admissions
Jurgen title yet?
Yeah, it was associate provost at that time, and then executive director. So yeah, but it was, of course, it was on me. But I had just an incredible team. I have an incredible team. Mm-hmm. Dan came in early on as we were implementing Slate. Which was obviously a huge undertaking, but really important. And what we really focused a lot on is overhauling our tours and events, mm-hmm. and just being very intentional and purposeful with that. We have something now that we call Crimson Door Hospitality, which is kind of something that we do to really ensure that we're putting our best foot forward. One of the things I didn't mention, Ken, right when I was doing my college search way back, I chose Marquette, but Marquette was probably at the bottom of my list when I was looking at schools. And I won't name the other schools, but the other three schools were the tours were absolutely terrible. And Marquette was really purposeful and really good at sort of telling the story. And so I think that's one of those things that always kind of stuck with me as I was, even before I knew I was going to be in admissions, that how important that was to make that lasting impression, to really kind of connect deeply with your customers.
Yeah. So tell me a little more about Crimson Door Hospitality. What are some of the markers of that?
Yeah.
Unless if you don't want to give away any secrets, although I'm sure people could probably secret shop you if they wanted to.
That's right.
But what would be, what are some of the, the tenets of
Crimson Door Hospitality? I would say, if just kind of in a general sense, what we try to get across to our team members is this idea of inspired hospitality. Mm. So really kind of going above and beyond, sort of anticipating the needs of so not just waiting to serve students or to serve families, but to really think about what are they really going to need, two steps down the road, and going above and beyond with that. And it was all sort of inspired by, we collectively read a book by Danny Meyer called Setting the Table. And so I know a former guest of yours talked about this too, but we have been doing this for years as well.
Yeah.
And kind of using that restaurant hospitality.
Is that Shake Shack?
Shake Shack, yes, that's
right. I think it was Angel Perez may have mentioned that first episode.
I remember that. Yeah. I was blown away because we were doing the exact same thing at the time. Yeah. So I would say it's just every element and just stressing it with the team. Just stressing how do we think about every element of a tour or an event to make sure it's the best that it can possibly be to serve each person individually.
you mentioned the family feel and yes. that it feels smaller than a flagship. And I suspect that's one of the ways you can make a larger institution feel intimate and that's homey and welcoming for your students.
That's right. I think what I've found is that culture is everything. And you always see these jokes about basketball coaches talking about culture repeatedly, but it's really true. I think, you know, if you have to have good culture, it has to be something that's believed from the top down, but it has to be something that permeates the entire organization. And okay. so when I take hiring is one thing that I take very, very seriously. I still second interview every front facing person that kind of comes into our division. I think it's really, really important to bring the right people in, but then also ensure that they have the opportunity to really kind of become part of that culture and sort of flourish while they're within it. So
what are you, let's make this the how to win at the OU job interview, but what are you looking for in those conversations?
Yeah,
and maybe it varies based on the role, but what are some of the things that tell you this is a person who's going to be a good match?
Absolutely. That's a good question, Ken. We have four values in our division that we've sort of established, and it's somewhat of a progression. So we're looking for somebody who has integrity, care, intentionality, and innovation, or innovative spirit. So, you know, those four things kind of help us determine, because a lot of times when you're hiring a new admissions counselor or a new financial aid counselor, you know, you have to sort of project into the future. Does this person have the ability to do these things? And so that's kind of the central tenets that we really use to determine the best fit for our okay. team. So
how did you come to those values or come to those four as your values?
Yeah, well, a couple of us went over actually to Disney, the Disney Institute.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, several years
ago. Sounds like it was a setup question. Like we had talked about this before, okay, go on.
But they have exceptional customer service. And so we took that idea, but then obviously we looked at what are the things that we need to excel as a division of enrollment management.
Okay. And so you actually went to the Institute?
Yep. With a couple of staff members, six, 7 years ago.
Okay.
And then used that as sort of the basis for the four values.
What a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's also a great team builder to have. Not that everybody gets to go to Disney.
Right.
To be invited to go with the VP for those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting to kind of hear about how they handle this.
So you're looking for those when you're hiring folks, and obviously not everybody's going to have those sorts of things. But how do you suss out whether somebody is going to be contribute to an innovative culture, for example?
Yeah, I think the questions that you ask during the interview and asking for specifics about what they've done previously and how it kind of fits into those four and really kind of, delving more into that, that sort of comes to the forefront, because it does, those questions sometimes take people by surprise, obviously. But I think, people who have really kind of been thoughtful about the position, that they're thinking about, often are able to really say, this is how I've done this in the past. This is how it's going to relate to me in the future. So,
well, and in doing that, it sounds like you're also avoiding the common trap of so many interviews, which is the prospective interview question, like what's it going to be like, or what are you going to do here, rather than really focusing in on specifics and history and details of what the person has already done.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because anybody can sound great when they're talking about what they might be doing. But it's having the evidence of, okay, what sort of behaviors and expressions have they done that might align with these, might map over these four values that we have. That's great.
That's right. And I think, so the next step then, of course, is, hiring the right people, but then also setting them up to succeed. We've got a culture of, I would say, continuous learning, professional development. So we do things, even just internally, if somebody is, great at, you know, X skill, whatever the skill is, they can kind of present to the other team members. And we set aside time for that.
So do you have like a dedicated, like a regular cadence for this, or is it just as it comes up? I'm looking for ideas.
Yeah, we do. We have, it's a several different, you know, things like this, but we have about every other month that we bring people in, and it's, and you can opt into it or not. It's kind of a choice, obviously, but a lot of people love talking about these different topics that we have. We have a book club. We also have a book club that I think, you know, continuous learning is really important. And so that's kind of part of our culture as well.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm beginning to see, or at least hear from you, some of the proof in the pudding that Hamrin was telling us about all those years. I mean, not to be super cheesy about it, but he would speak so, he loved working with you. Yeah. And he loved that culture that you all had built there. And just hearing some of these markers of what you've been doing, I can see why. And there's some folks that sort of do these things on high, or yes, we'll have these lunch and learns and whatnot, but it sounds like these are things you're doing with your people right? It's not just you're encouraging and watching it happen, but you're in there with them.
I definitely try to. Some days are better than others, you know.
Of course. I mean, you're getting demands, pulled up, yes, and you're getting pulled in a lot of directions, especially in an institution like that. But anyway, sorry. I just wanted that was a long way of complimenting you for the things I had heard from Dan over the years working for us. Mostly because it's like, well, gosh, why don't you do these things that Jeff was doing? Okay. thanks for that.
I'm sure you love that, Ken.
I agree with you on the setting the culture thing.
Yeah.
Back to your story.
Yeah. So I was going to say, another thing that we do, I think one of the things that I was able to do more of at Whitewater that I kind of lost, our division has 140 people in it. So connecting with people in the same ways is really a challenge outside of the leadership team. And so I also do something called Coffee Talk with Jeff. So every once in a while we meet with a different group of people to just kind of exchange ideas and to kind of hear the big picture things that we're working on. But then for me to hear from them too. So that's another thing that I've done that's, I think, worked fairly well and that people enjoy when they participate.
What do you hear from your team members about those?
I think when you are in this role, one of the things that I miss is the things that are happening at the ground level. You're like the last person to hear about it, you know?
Yes.
Here are the trends that I'm hearing, you know, these students are going to this school, or here's what this school is doing. And, you know, when you're caught up in all of the, you know, all the things that are happening in this role, it can be really challenging to hear those things. Or here's a process that really needs to be fixed. How do we fix that? And so hearing about some of those things has really helped me kind of get back into, serving our team well, I think, or just seeing what we can do to make sure that our culture remains strong.
Well, and I suspect, I mean, it's one thing to hear. It's another thing to follow up on. The things that you're hearing from people, that system becomes a self-fulfilling system. If people believe that the things they're bringing to you, and not, you're not gonna be able to fix everything or address everything, but, with your credibility, they've got faith that it's not just a show.
Yeah. I hope so. I hope that's right. Yeah. I don't know if I always deliver, but I try.
You're too humble to say it for yourself, but they wouldn't still be going on if people didn't have value. Unless, of course, if they're just afraid not to do it, Jeff, because you're such a despot.
That's right.
So we got this kid who, you know, grew up wanting to be an attorney. Mm-hmm. And now we've got you who's, you know, at the top of his field. If you could go back to young Jeff, who was thinking about being an attorney, and seeing where you are now or where he is now, if you want to do it in the third person, what are some of the things you might tell him, as he was heading into this journey?
Yeah. Well, I think, the need to listen to others, as I kind of said earlier, I think you really have to, I think there's such a temptation as a leader to think that you know it all. And you know, I'm only as good as my leadership team, and I've got an amazing leadership team. And you know, I love to just, I think just making sure that you understand that, that listening is so, so important, continuing to listen.
Well, you said culture of continuous learning, you know, you've got to lead by example on that too. And admit what you don't know.
Yeah. I think that, again, the hiring the best people and just ensuring that you really put a lot of effort in, you know, you win with people. So, you know, making sure that you surround yourself with the very best people that you can, who buy into the mission and who really trust each other. I think that is something that I would have probably told myself back then. And I think also, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, I think that's the saying. But you have to, you know, incremental improvement is important. I know when we were doing some things both in both within admissions and recruitment, but also within when we were kind of creating the division of enrollment management from you know, to really do an enrollment management model.
Yeah.
You know, just you would see, you know, 300 things that have to be kind of tinkered with. But what are the things that are going to really move the needle initially? Right. What do we focus on? And so being okay with that incremental improvement each year, I think that that's been a lesson in patience for me. But it's also, I think, really important.
And knowing which of the 300 are
important.
Not going to get done, or
right?
Okay, that's a thing. But maybe that's something we're going to have to live with. We sometimes talk about the juice squeeze matrix.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Is this juice worth the squeeze?
Yeah.
Thinking where you are, the answer probably is no. I could not have foreseen this, but could you have foreseen this?
No way.
You know, 215 job applications, get a financial aid gig at UWM, and then you go over to Marquette. Like, did you see a leadership trajectory for yourself? Was that always kind of on the horizon for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I always hoped so, but I don't know that I believed it, you know, as I was kind of going through it, I wanted to learn as much as possible. I don't know that I ever really thought that that was going to be possible, but as the opportunities arose, you know, I put myself in those situations, I guess, to have, that, you know, each next step. But yeah, I don't think that I really set out with that in mind.
So I'll ask this question. Is a college presidency in your future, Jeff?
I don't really have the desire to be a college president.
Right. I've started asking some folks that question only because, you know, especially given the breadth of portfolios that some people have, and yours is enormous. You know, if that's a thought that ever crosses your mind, do I want to go, you know, one step higher on this?
Yeah. So I have tremendous respect. We have an incredible president, Joe Harris, who is just so, so good at leadership and communication. He's just such an incredible communicator and just connector. And but that's a stressful job. I've got a stressful job, but
you both do. Who of the three people on your campus with the highest stress jobs, you, the president, or the football coach?
Oh boy.
Do you ever get together and just, you know, have the, okay, who's really got the toughest job?
I put the provost up there too. The provost has got a tough job.
Okay.
I mean, football coach, but I mean, I would say probably the football coach. Yeah, everything is scrutinized. Everything,
of course, and everybody has an opinion, and everybody knows more. Not everybody knows how to criticize a college president. Well, although more people getting into the college president criticism game.
Yeah,
Jeff, this is I'm not surprised at all. This has gone quite rapidly, and I have a list of maybe 12 other questions I want to ask you, but there are 8 questions I know I need to get to.
Great.
Which is the rapid descent.
I'm ready, Ken.
Here we go. Question number 1. What is your walkout song?
So, Ken, sorry to be difficult here, but I really wrestled with this one. Mm-hmm. So, really tried to find the right
fit. I would expect nothing less from you.
So recently, Toby Keith, who's a country music legend, who lives
actually passed away.
He did, and he lives here in Norman. He lived here in Norman, and he was a huge OU supporter and had a big charity for years before he contracted cancer for pediatric cancer patients. But I wanted to find the perfect Toby Keith song, but my favorite Toby Keith song is actually called "Don't Let the Old Man In."
Okay.
I don't think that fits with the walkout criteria. It's a very melancholy.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
So if that messes up your playlist, you can choose "Thunderstruck" by AC/DC. Don't Let the Old Man In is what I'll say for that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good.
It's a good song.
What's the best thing you've read lately, Jeff?
Yeah. So I've always got about four or five books going on my bedside table.
Okay.
But one that I recently read that I really like that we're actually reading as part of our book club is called Unreasonable Hospitality.
Yep.
And it's by Will Guidara. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of he's a disciple of Danny Meyer. So we talked about Danny Meyer earlier, and it's restaurant hospitality and the specific mindset, to kind of get there. And so,
yeah,
a really, really good book, and kind of, it was almost like the next step to what we've been already doing.
Yeah. That one got some play on The Bear.
Oh, nice.
It actually has a nice little cameo in there, and that's all I'll say because I know you haven't seen it yet.
Yes, but, that's right.
If you're as into those two books as your team is, you might want to give The Bear
I'm going to watch that.
The hospitality thing, especially in season two, is really, really powerful.
Fantastic.
Okay. Question number three, what's something you're eager to read next? And you said you've got four or five things going on your bedstand. So,
yeah. So a book that was recommended to me, that I have up next is Belonging by Owen Eastwood.
Okay.
And it taps into the ancient, Polynesian idea of the importance of belonging to others and what we can learn about it and how you can, kind of set a strong culture around that idea of belonging. So I think that's one that I'm really intrigued by.
Yeah. Great recommendation. I'll give that one a look. Mm-hmm. If you're a podcast fan, is there one you particularly enjoy?
Well, of course the ELP is right at the top.
No. Yeah. Okay.
So
checks in the mail, pal.
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of the podcasts I listen to are either specific sports related or spirituality related. So the one that I listen to, kind of a separate one that probably would appeal to kind of widely, is it's called Missing in Alaska. And it's a true crime podcast.
Okay.
About a plane crash in the 70s in Alaska. It's a wild story. I really recommend it. Yeah. It's the best one I think I've listened to. It's really good.
Okay. So, well, you threw a couple crumbs in there, so I'm going to pick them up. You said there's a sports podcast maybe, or a spirituality podcast, or both. What do you have?
Bible.
We can go with a library here. So what do you got for?
Bible in a Year.
Yeah.
By Father Mike Schmitz. So I've been listening to that recently. And then there are a couple of kind of OU specific ones I listen to for football. So I've become a very big OU football fan in the years that I've been down here.
Do you have the shoes that Hamron has?
I do. Yeah, there was a sale. Yeah, we bought them at the same sale that he used to bought some cleats that he would clack around campus when we'd make our class. I wouldn't go that far, but he would.
That sounds very Dan. Okay. Question number five, what's your favorite thing to make in the kitchen?
So my family would tell you I'm a horrible cook. So I'm good at grilling.
Why I'm not asking them.
Not good at cooking. So I'm going to say every morning I grind the coffee beans and make an incredible pot of coffee for my lovely wife. So that's my favorite thing.
What do you use to take and keep notes? I imagine you have to take and keep notes the breadth of the work you're working on and the people you listen to.
So I like the Zebra ballpoint pens or the retractable. And then I'm a big fan of the Moleskine journals.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The kind of small journals. So I have a number of them that I bring with me to take notes.
Okay. What's a memorable bit of advice you've received?
So I've got two, if that's okay, Ken.
Please.
All right. Please. So when I was going through law school, and you know, kind of in that moment, that crisis moment in my life, mm-hmm. I was trying to kind of determine my next move. I was meeting regularly with a Jesuit priest named Father Bob Lywicki. I don't know if you ever knew Father Bob.
No, I didn't.
But he was an absolutely amazing person. He actually physically looked and sounded like Yoda. Except
really?
the sentence syntax was normal.
Okay.
But he, if you just kind of imagine that, but he was so wise and so patient and just a holy, holy person. And he came into my life at exactly the right moment, I think.
Uh-huh.
But Father Bob talked to me often about the importance of gratitude. And, you know, just he would, every time I'd meet with him, he'd say, you have to make gratitude part of your everyday routine. And how it allows you to subconsciously prepare yourself during times of desolation. And so,
such,
you know,
a good Jesuit word.
Yeah. So, you know, if you can find things to be grateful for, you know, it brings light and love into your life. And so I think that's one of those pieces of advice that I don't always follow, but I've never forgotten it. And it's really done me good. And we start some of our staff meetings, our larger staff meetings, with, I make them pause for 30 seconds. to think about someone they're grateful for. And it's a great way to kind of put you in good spirits, I think. And kind of, yeah.
And just keep it to themselves, just kind of a quiet reflection.
Yeah, quiet reflection.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love that.
Yep.
That's a great piece of advice.
I think they like it.
Yeah.
I think they like it, but, or at least they tell me that they do. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's classy.
So the other one, I think is kind of from Roby, but it was kind of re-engaged a couple of years ago. So, Jenny Baranchik, who's our, OU women's basketball coach, she was actually an assistant at Marquette when both of us were there, I think. And then now she's the head coach here at OU. She came and talked to our leadership team at a leadership retreat that we had, and just an amazing leader on our campus. But Coach Jenny said to focus on being your best and ensuring that your team is the best. You know, the competition isn't hoping someone else does worse than you. It's just to focus on being your best and how do you get better and compete. So I think that's something that Roby also always told us, is let's not focus on necessarily what other schools are doing, you know, let's focus. I mean, be aware of it, but we're not going to try to hope for their demise as we, you know, get better. We want to just focus on how do we be our best.
Be the best version of yourselves that you can be. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Question last, presuming you have a bucket list, what's an item on it that you haven't yet checked off?
Yep. So right at the top of the list, I think, is traveling more with my wife. So we've got four kids. I didn't mention that earlier. We have four kids now.
Picked up a couple since you
got
to Oklahoma.
We have two Sconnies and two Okies. So
okay, a Sconokie.
Yeah, that's right. But back when I was recruiting all over the country, you know, sometimes she'd come on the trips with me. You know, we've traveled a lot of the country together, but we really like to go to Europe with her.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was at our 20th, we just had our 20th anniversary. And my goal was to go to Ireland with her. And that just didn't happen this past year. Okay. So 25th, we're going to go somewhere in Europe together. So we've never been there together before.
Oh, well, may it happen. Make it so. Well, Jeff, thank you. I can hear the campus bells going off right now.
We've got a tremendous carol on here at OU.
No kidding. Maybe that too. You had a great carol on at Marquette. Now you've got this one at OU.
That's right.
Perfect.
That's right.
Is there somebody live playing it there?
I don't think campus? it's not a live carol on here, but there was at Marquette. I think there still is at Marquette, if I'm not mistaken.
I remember going up there and watching them play the carol on.
I remember that.
It was amazing. All right. Jeff, I should let you go back and ring some more bells, but I will close by saying thank you. Thanks for coming on the show. I will also say may all your big dreams come true, at least the good ones. And to you, dear listener, thanks for listening. Be well and do well.